Doc James, there are ramifications in some of the suggestions you made. I just happen to have a telegram here. I think I hadn't intended to share it, but I've got a telegram from the educational director who's holding the fort down back in Jackson, Tennessee at my church. And here's what he says. Congratulations. Church votes approval and votes to pay you $50 a week and divide the rest of your salary among the staff. I want to see who this sickly old decrepit man that's all worn out is here, Dr. Herschel Hobbs.
Well, you know, I was... I had a virus in Kansas City, and it just about got one of my lungs. But there ain't nothing wrong with the other one.
I've known and admired and loved E.S. James for as long as I have known him. And that's been for a good many years. And to my knowledge, this is the only time that I've ever been on the opposite side of the fence from him. I had thought that he was infallible. I'm so sorry to find out he isn't. I love you too, Dr. James. Two years ago, a motion was made to limit the term of the president to 1 year. It was voted down overwhelmingly 2 years ago. I remember at the time I said that I knew when they made that motion, I said I knew that after 2 years of Hobbs this would happen. Last year, I guess it may have been rumored around I was getting ready to run again, so they decided they'd limit it again. But anyway, last year the motion was made that you heard a moment ago. I did not speak against it, though I was against it at the time. But I'd made up my mind, if the Lord would help me, I was going to keep my big mouth shut at that convention, lest somebody think I was still trying to take over the chair. But I do feel that this is a very, very serious matter. Some have said it; they don't think it matters at all. I think it matters greatly. Now, it has been said that the job is too hard. I won't go into the honor part because Dr. James and I both agree that while it is an honor, that isn't the purpose if we elect a man. If we're just going to honor men, then we can elect several, you know, at a time. But then, of course, none of us want to do that. But the matter of it being a hard job, it is a hard job. But a man that doesn't expect and isn't willing to shoulder a hard job should withdraw his name if it's ever put up. Now, reference was made to one instance where a church asked the pastor not to be elected. Well, now, any church in the Southern Baptist Convention has that right, and any pastor can do as was done in that occasion. Or as many have done to withdraw their names when they're put in nomination. But if a man accepts the position, he should expect hard work. In some ways, it's hard on the church. They want the pastor there when they want him. You know, there are two kinds of members, or rather, there's a certain kind of a member that just wants his pastor there on two different occasions. That's when he's there and when he's not. And I'm sure that there are times when the church wants a pastor when they'd like to have him when he isn't there. But you heard this morning the chairman of the board of deacons of the church of which this man is now pastor say that it had been a blessing to their church and they pledged their support as he carried on for a second year. I think that the man and the church, if it happens to be a pastor, assume an obligation to this convention. And the church itself can make up its mind, the pastor can make up his mind, whether or not he wants to serve and undergo this obligation. But once he agrees to do it, then I think that the convention and what is best for the convention itself comes first. We can never use all of the capable men. There are perhaps many, well, I'm sure there are many men more capable than the ones who are elected, but they don't get a chance to show it. But it isn't a question of how many men are available, but how can the one man chosen do the job best? Now, I know from experience that it takes at least 6 months to get used to being president of the Southern Baptist Convention. It's a new experience. It's a frightening experience. And if a man is, if he knows when he's elected the first time, well, this is it. By the time he gets used to being president, he has to start packing up, move out for some other fellow to come in, start getting used to it. Furthermore, a man is a lame duck the minute he's elected. Now then, what is the overriding matter here? I think it is, what do we want our president to do? Do we want him to preside once a year? Do we want him to make a few inspirational speeches? I know what the Constitution says about it, and I'm not so sure but that we ought to be making motions to study the constitutional requirements of the office, because except to add and the executive committee and a member of the executive committee, and that he shall appoint the music director, the offices of the president of this convention have not been changed in the Constitution since 1845. And I submit to you that there is much more to being president of this convention now than there was then. What do we want a president to do? We want him to provide the very best kind of leadership that he can possibly provide. Now then, I think the stature of leadership is involved here. By the very nature of our organization, we have boards and agencies that are elected by the convention. They in turn elect an executive secretary or other comparable officer, and they provide a great proportion of the leadership of our convention. But there is not the president of the convention, who is a member of all boards and the executive committee, is the only officer in this convention who is a member of all of those, and who is elected by the convention and is responsible directly to the convention. Now then, can any one of these men, if we take the president's office and make a one-year term out of it, whereas these others, these executive heads of agencies, and I love every one of them, but if they serve year after year, we expect them to grow in leadership. But if we take the president's office and make a one-year term out of it, and that's all, then we demote it to that of a presiding officer and an inspirational speaker and practically nothing more. And therefore, we unwittingly turn more and more of the leadership of our convention over to the executives of the agencies who themselves are employees of the convention. Now then, another thing. We need somebody in the convention who can provide an overall leadership. Last night we saw this man stand up here and challenge us, the Home Mission Board, the Foreign Mission Board, the Sunday School Board, the Radio and Television Commission, and on and on and on. That all of us together move concertedly into this program that we are facing. There isn't another man in the Southern Baptist Convention here who could have done that last night. Dr. Cawthon, with his great ability to stir our hearts, he's the executive secretary of the Foreign Mission Board. And these other men are heads of various groups. And yet each one of them would be speaking within the context of his own responsibility and not that of the others. But when the president speaks, he speaks for all of us. At least he speaks on behalf of all of us, and he can challenge all of us to move together. We do not need a splintered leadership. We need the leadership provided in the agencies and their various groups. But we need one man who can stand up and say, somewhat be the quarterback and say, now let's all move together. And the president is the man to do that. He could not have gotten up here. He couldn't get up tonight and make that speech had he been elected for the first time this morning. He spent one whole year in getting ready, working with our agencies and other people, getting ready to make that speech tonight, last night. He has a program to give to us that he has worked with others in developing. Now he needs a second year in which to put that program on. So I say that we need to stay with the present constitutional requirement. Give a man 1 year to get used to being president, a 1 year in which to work with our agencies and our leaders in planning a program, and then give him 1 year in which to challenge us and to lead us in the accomplishing of it. Actually, the responsibility is not upon me, say, to defend the present system. It's upon others to prove we ought to change it. We've done pretty good under the present system. If a man is elected and doesn't want to serve a second term, he can refuse to serve. If the convention elects a man and they don't want to elect him, they can refuse to elect him. But in the whole of it, we should not be bound by the Constitution to 1 year. Let's leave it 2 years. I believe it's the best way.
As a member of the program committee, we have other matters tonight, so I move that we tend to the previous question and vote on this matter.
All right. There's a motion for the previous question, which requires a two-thirds vote, which means we're closing debate. You've heard a strong appeal on both sides of this issue. And those in favor of closing debate and taking a vote, this is the previous question, then let it be known by an uplifted hand. Let's see if we're ready. Those opposed in like manner, we're ready to vote. And the question before us then is the bylaw amendment proposed by Brother James to limit the term of presidency to 1 year. Those in favor of the motion, let it be known by standing, please. Those opposed, by the same sign. Thank you. It's so ordered. And you will be seated. And peace has been made on the platform, as you notice. Brother Joe Burton has asked for a point of personal privilege that I'm going to take the liberty of extending to him because he shared with me the nature of his statement, and I think it is worth your knowing for the benefit of future sessions.
Brother President and friends, I wish to request of this convention, that you not ask me to serve again as recording secretary. Of course, it's presumptuous to do this at this moment, but it would give you opportunity to be thinking about nomination of some other person in the morning when you resume the election of officers. I could state the reasons, but I think it's not necessary now.
Thank you, and I gave him this personal privilege because it is usually customary for our secretaries to be reelected, and you will need to be giving thought to the person you want for recording secretary when we have the election of officers in the next session on the order of business. We come now to our next portion of the program, which is the WMU report. Before I present Mrs. Fling, president of the WMU, I want to present another lady. I'm going to ask that Mrs. John C. Zachary would come and stand with me. I want to tell you about this lady, and I want to recognize the wonderful, faithful women who mean so much in the life of our church. Mrs. Zachary is a member of the Second Baptist Church of Laurel, Mississippi, Second Avenue Baptist Church of Laurel, Mississippi, where Brother Tom Rayburn is pastor. She has 12 years of perfect attendance, now listen to this, in Sunday school, training union, morning worship, night worship, WMU, and prayer meeting. And she's even been in some brotherhood meetings. As far as we know, this record of attendance is unmatched in the Southern Baptist Convention. Whenever she's visiting somewhere else, she goes to these church meetings, sends the bulletins home, and she has set this marvelous, marvelous record of faithfulness. I want her to stand here with me as a symbol of the faithfulness of the women in our churches. And I want every member of the WMU to stand right now. Will you? We'd like to salute you. And men, let's give them all a hand. She asked, is this prayer meeting Texas style tonight? Now, Mrs. Fling, would you come? And after the WMU report, I'm going to ask that Brother Gregory Walcott shall take the chair. Mrs. Fling, the lovely and capable and dedicated president of the WMU, we're proud of you.
Mr. President, I move that the report of Woman's Missionary Union, found on page 197 of the Book of Reports, be adopted without reading, and that the time be given to discussion.
You've heard the adoption of the report. It's been seconded. If you approve of this report, if you approve of this report, will you please indicate by raising your right hand? Those opposed, same sign. The report is.
Mr. Chairman, I should like to present our beloved Executive Secretary, Ms. Alma Hunt, who will speak on our WMU work. Much has been said tonight about age. Sometimes we laughingly introduce Ms. Hunt as the oldest executive in the Southern Baptist Convention. But we hasten to add, from standpoint of service only. Indeed, she is, from standpoint of service, more years of service, the oldest executive of any of our Southern Baptist agencies, commissions, or boards. Ms. Alma Hunt, our able secretary.
Mr. President, if the ushers in this auditorium had had four hands, you would have in your hands now a brochure entitled Woman's Missionary Union Helping the Church Fulfill Its Mission. Because the ushers had their hands full, these were not given out as you came into the auditorium. But as you leave, they will be given to you, those of you who are seated on the main floor of the arena. Those of you who are in the loges and the balconies will find them on tables in the main foyer. That is the first 10,000 of you who get there. This brochure will appear in the August issue of Royal Service. This is a major attempt to communicate with you who are here. And when the August magazine is released with members of Women's Missionary Union and churches of our convention, and with pastors of all our churches to whom we are sending this August issue of Royal Service, this is our effort to communicate with you concerning Women's Missionary Union's participation in church and denominational programming. Dr. Dahoney mentioned last evening his observation of the high level of working together on the part of convention agencies. This supplement to Royal Service points up how Women's Missionary Union is working with other convention agencies to make available materials and program suggestions for a correlated and coordinated program of work in each church. We believe Southern Baptist churches stand at an unparalleled moment in history. We believe our churches have the potential for winning the world for Christ. Proclaiming the gospel effectively in a rapidly changing environment makes demands on every Christian, every church, and every denominational agency which assists the churches. Changing the world for Christ can happen only as each church takes seriously its mission, only as each organization of the church marshals its full resources to do the work of the church, and only as each church member is led to become seriously concerned with knowing and doing God's will. 3 weeks ago, representatives of Southern Baptist churches, widely scattered and ranging in membership from very large to very small, met for 3 or 4 days in Nashville. Out of this meeting came this consensus, quote, To be of maximum effectiveness in this rapidly changing age, the church must continuously rethink the institutional aspects of her life and ministry in the light of the New Testament. This may mean the presentation of the changeless Christ to a changing world by a changed method, end quote. Women's Missionary Union is committed to help each church achieve its full potential in proclaiming the changeless gospel in a rapidly changing world. We recognize that business as usual will not accomplish the task. We are ready to make the changes necessary to meet the demands and to take advantage of the opportunities of our day. Women's Missionary Union is a partner with other church organizations and with other convention agencies in helping to put into practice the concepts wrapped up in correlation and coordination, two words used to describe a very simple but significant idea. The idea is that all organizations of the church and all convention agencies which assist the church will be brought into proper relationship, and that they will work together in harmonious action to help the church carry out the mission Christ gave it. The idea is not new. From time to time, over a period of 40 years, convention agencies have made attempts to answer the church's pleas for correlation and coordination. But only recently have we made significant breakthroughs. With prospects of correlation, the potential of Southern Baptists becomes exciting. When overlapping and duplication are minimized and our efforts and energies are directed into united efforts toward common goals, no limits can be placed on the advance that is possible under the leadership of the Holy Spirit. Correlation and coordination are goals to be achieved both by the church and by the denomination. As the denomination assumes its share of the responsibility, the task becomes easier for the churches. Until recently, most of the planning done by church organizations on the convention level was done unilaterally. Each organization planned its work without disciplined thought about how it related to the work of other organizations. But the pattern is changing. Convention leaders of church program organizations now sit down together monthly to discuss their work at strategic points in its development. Each organization has opportunity to evaluate the work of other organizations and is likewise evaluated. In addition to these meetings of program leaders, WMU staff members now participate in monthly age-level planning conferences with Sunday school, brotherhood, training union, and music ministry staffs. These conferences bring together all the convention leaders who are working with a given age group in the church. Out of these meetings are coming common understandings and concepts of work which will influence the planning of every organization. The result will be not sameness, but unity, not duplication, but rather a distinctive contribution by each organization toward a planned outcome. With determined effort, we are making the church the central focus in all our general planning, and the church member the focus in all age-level planning. Already this effort is moving church organizations from an organization-centered concern to person-centered and church-centered concerns. The purposes of the church and the needs of the individuals are considered first. Then organizational interests find their proper places. Out of this planning process and within the context of correlated planning in the Interagency Council, several indications of progress are already evident. There is a new emphasis on the church council as the group in the church responsible for coordinating the work of the church. There is a new tool for coordinating church planning, the Church Program Guidebook. There are new understandings of the church tasks performed by church organizations, and there are better relationships among organizations growing out of these understandings. There is a correlated emphasis on personal evangelism planned for 1966. There is a moving forward with the joint preparation by Sunday School, Training Union, Brotherhood, the Music Ministry, and WMU of a comprehensive, correlated church curriculum called the Life and Work Curriculum, which will be available to churches in October 1966. Women's Missionary Union is grateful to be a participant in these significant undertakings. This may well be the beginning of a grand new era for Southern Baptists. The church's nature as children of God and the body of Christ will not change. The work which Christ commissioned the church to do will not change. But the demands on the church imposed by its environment will change. And methods and procedures must change to equip the church to be and to do what Christ intends for it to be and to do. Women's Missionary Union is dedicated to making plans and providing materials which will aid the churches in conserving and directing their resources toward fulfilling the commission Christ gave to them.
Thank you, Miss Hunt. I suppose you never thought the day would come when a motion picture and television personality would preside at a Southern Baptist convention. Well, it means either one or two things. That you're attempting something new or you're scraping the bottom of the barrel. Recently, I had the great privilege and opportunity to be sponsored by the Foreign Mission Board for an evangelistic tour in Thailand, Malaysia. One night I was in Singapore preaching to an enormous crowd. Dr. Baker James Cawthon was there. And noticing the ill effects of motion pictures on the society of Malaysia and Thailand and Southeast Asia, I felt compelled to make a statement that night during my, just prior to my message. And I cautioned that audience, mainly of young people, don't believe all you see in American movies. And of course, I was speaking through an interpreter. And I went on to say, but most particularly, do not imitate loose living and low morals when you see it in movies. Well, when the service was over, the interpreter came up to me and smiled and said, Mr. Walcott, I attend quite a few movies, but I've never heard of these stars loose living and low morals. Let's get on with our business. There is a fellow named Cassius who makes poems about himself. How good he is and how great he is and a little of everything else. But tonight I have a man who never boasts about a thing. When you turn on your radio and get a real entrancer, or you turn on your TV set and see this is the answer, there is one person you can thank for such wholesome and clean rendition. It's Paul N. Stevens, mastermind of the Radio and Television Commission. And just today, a brand new building has been dedicated. We find it to be something grand, and it's not overrated. The good news will keep going out to warm each Baptist heart. How glad we are that God saw fit to give this group a start. The chair recognizes Dr. Paul Stevens.
President, messengers, I should like to make a motion that the report of the Radio and Television Commission, as found on pages 176, 77, and 178 in your book of reports, be adopted.
has been a motion and seconded. If you favor this adoption, will you please indicate by raising your right hand? In the opposition, the same sign. There is no opposition.
I want to thank Mr. Walcott, or Gregory, as he is so fondly known, for those fine words of introduction. I would like, in turn, to pass on this same spirit of appreciation to some who are here on the platform with me, and to the members of the Radio and Television Commission who serve you and do so well. The new chairman of the Radio and Television Commission, elected today, is Dr. Andrew Hall, Fayetteville, Arkansas. I'm delighted to have him here on the platform. Will you stand, please, Dr. Hall? Thank you. I should like to also recognize some special visitors that are with us. I will not ask them to stand, not knowing where they may be in the audience. We've been especially honored to have three outstanding men in the field of religious broadcasting with us today and taking part in the dedication of our new building. One of those men is Dr. Eugene Berteman of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. He is the director of their radio and television work, a longtime associate of the famous and wonderful Dr. Walter Meyer, and is now the president of the Christian Broadcasters Association. We also were honored to have Mr. Robert Curry from the Broadcasting and Film Commission of the National Council of Churches, and Mr. Fred Essex, director of television work for the American Baptist Convention. These three men, outstanding in their field, honored us with their presence, for which I express to them your gratitude. I also would like to say, on behalf of the Southern Baptist Convention, a great word of thanks to the Columbia Broadcasting System, who, as far as we know, have set a standard that has never been done before, or have taken a step that has never been done before, and that is the broadcasting or the coverage of a denominational convention. Believe it or not, as far as we know, this is the first time any of the networks has attempted to cover a great sprawling convention such as this. You will be able to see an hour report on yourselves on Sunday morning on the Columbia Broadcasting System. You've been on your good behavior, so you won't be ashamed when you see yourself. I want to express gratitude to Dr. Stanton of CBS and to the crew that have been here covering this convention. Now I should like also to recognize that famous old war horse, Dr. Herschel Hobbs. I told him I was glad he got... I told him I was glad he got all that ugliness out of him so he could come up here and be sweet for a while. I want him to have a few words to say to you, our Baptist Hour preacher, who today is being heard on more stations by more people than ever before in all of our history. For his leadership in this ministry, we're deeply grateful. I express to him your gratitude. Why don't you tell him too?
Brother Paul and all of you, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. This old man business, you know, they get younger all the time, don't they? I mean, those under us. I read the other day about a woman who had been sick. Her husband was talking with another man. The man asked him, said, "How's your wife?" "Oh, she's getting along very fine." "Well, I thought she was sick." "She was." "Well, now, what cured her?" He said, "Well, a doctor told her that what she had was a symptom of old age." I count it one of the greatest privileges of my life to be associated with the Radio and Television Commission, with the staff, and with Brother Paul Stevens. I could say Dr. Stevens because he is. But one of the first things I noticed when I began to go to Fort Worth each month to record Baptist Hour sermons was that they always referred to him as Brother Paul. And I found that that spirit of familiness, to coin a new word, permeates everything that's done there. And I think that along with the leadership that has been provided by the commission and by its offices and by the executive secretary speaks for the progress that has been made down through these years. A great highlight was reached this afternoon. Brother Paul has been kind enough to refer to the CBS program. We had a hotline from the NBC that was used in picking up telephone calls from all over the world, from missionaries calling into us and speaking to us as we were there. I said, Paul, these networks do not do these things just because they love you, though they do love you, but because they believe in what you're doing. If those people who are experts in their business believe in what we are doing, then surely we can believe in it. Whether it be radio or television, as we penetrate this world and send the gospel out to the ends of the earth, I thank God and you for the privilege of having a small part in it.
Now, if we may have the house lights turned out, please, and we'll begin our report to you for this Southern Baptist Convention, 1965.
Simple, doesn't it? Sand and cement, wood and rocks, steel and glass. It's our new building, dedicated this very afternoon, but it seems so unattainable just a short time ago. The commission has lived in rented rooms and borrowed offices and converted store buildings, moving here and there, seeking some place somehow to meet the demands made upon it. And now, a building constructed just for it. The only one like it in the world. Designed to help the commission fulfill the assignment of the Great Commission, as well as the assignment of the Southern Baptist Convention. And it arrives exactly at the right moment. Well, you see, friends, timing is one of the most important aspects of our lives. All of life's joys and satisfactions and accomplishments are the result of timing. This world today is a world of listeners and spectators, of men and women poised on the brink of history to listen and then decide the direction for their lives. And never before in the history of humanity have so few had such an opportunity to turn the minds and hearts of so many toward the recognition of God's love. In the history of the Radio and Television Commission, timing is the very essence of our opportunity and existence. The industries of radio and television are looking to us as leaders, not only because of our position on the matter of government control of broadcasting, but also the quality and quantity of our programming. They are also aware of the excellent facilities which you have provided. And if they've been receiving good programs from us in the past, they're expecting better programs from us in the future. For the gospel of the living Christ must be carried to the many, many millions who still have not heard it. But there are enormous problems to overcome if we are to succeed. Problem number one is probably the birthquake that is shaking our world. An increase of 70 million babies is predicted in the next 20 years for the United States alone. And in underdeveloped countries, this problem is even greater. In some, for instance, the birth rates are so high that populations will actually double in 3 generations.
Dalla Commissione Radio e Televisione della Convenzione Battista del Sud. Direttore Paolo.
但愿我们主耶稣基督和那爱我们开恩将永远的。
In addition to finding enough missionaries to reach these countless millions, there are the problems of language barrier.
Is this freedom?
No!
Is this democracy?
No!
Is this equality?
No!
What do we want?
Freedom!
Now!
Racial conflict. Christian creeds and philosophies which make contact with all these people extremely difficult. Then there are the new emerging nations in Asia and Africa which reject, quote, the white man's religion, unquote. And there is one other major problem, perhaps the greatest of all, which challenges us at home and around the world. It's the rise of materialism. The men and women to whom, if anything at all, Christianity has become a mere system of ethics. If they attend church, they do it for social reasons, nothing else. They are the most difficult people to reach, for they are deaf except to secular communications. But Southern Baptists already have much of the weaponry that is necessary to attack these problems in their spiritual arsenal. Item number one is the Baptist Hour. During the early 1950s, the Baptist Hour was our only radio program. It was aimed at a vast audience of the rich, the poor, the ignorant, the educated, the black and the white, the north and the south, and the lost. Its audience was never greater than today, nor has it ever been carried by more radio stations than today, which is testimony to the effectiveness of the program and the preacher.
Como una contribución a la vida espiritual de las naciones, esta estación presenta la Hora Bautista, el orador de...
To reach the Spanish-speaking people of America, both North and South, we designed la Hora Bautista. It is the Baptist Hour in Spanish, and is now broadcast on 77 stations in the United States, Mexico, and Latin America. We were aware of missing a vast segment of our potential audience with nothing more than a preaching program. So in 1959, a new weapon in our arsenal was launched. It was called Master Control and was aimed at men and women who do not tune in to a preaching program. Yet these people have radio at their fingertips day and night. The success of the program speaks for itself. for it is the most widely listened to religious program in the world. 308 of the biggest radio stations in America now carry Master Control. We went on television for the first time in 1956 with The Answer, which has been carried on 227 stations during these 9 years, representing over $5 million worth of free time to Southern Baptist. Altogether, these and many other programs bring us down to this present moment. So here's what the picture looks like today.
The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with the Radio and Television Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention, has presented...
Master Control, ready!
We're producing 22 programs, totaling over 1,000 productions each year. In terms of time, we've gone from about 9,000 hours to over 37,000 hours. In terms of persons reached, we've gone from about 13 million in 1955 to over 60 million. That's an overall increase of 361%, believe it or not. In terms of outreach, the gospel is preached on radio and television by Southern Baptist on not just one continent, but six. Not just one type program, 22. And not just one language, 11. Yet there are millions of people we've not reached. People who have never heard the gospel from anyone. How do we reach them? The preachers, the missionaries, they're doing a tremendous job. But they need help. The very numbers of people, the distances in miles, the difficulties of travel, the physical barriers of closed borders, the artificial barriers of race, creed, and color all make their jobs more difficult. But they have, in our Radio and Television Commission, a proven weapon of support, a method of communication which penetrates iron or bamboo curtains and every other artificial barrier, a method of communication with a potential capability of blanketing the entire earth. In addition, the commission has developed a highly skilled staff in radio production, in television production, in finance and personnel, in market developing and scheduling, in promotion, publicity, foreign language production, and special projects, and many other technical skills. We will continue to expand our program of preaching on radio and television until we are assured that the gospel of Christ reaches more millions more consistently than the message of any other religious group or any other philosophy in the world. We're expanding our program of audience building, too. For instance, in 1964, we mailed 1 million pieces of printed material, including the Commission's monthly magazine, The Beam, and our Spanish magazine, Señales, to audiences all over the world. We are increasing and expanding our program of inquiry and counseling, too. For we know that we must be prepared for increased response from our greater radio and television coverage. The response to offers of counseling booklets made on The Answer has grown steadily through the years. A radio correspondence course for the thousands who write us for spiritual guidance every month will soon be a reality. We already have a more basic correspondence course in Spanish, which is widely used. We continue to expand our program of technical assistance in radio and television production to churches and individuals. A few months ago, A veteran audience measurement firm revealed that radio reaches 66% of all the homes in the United States every day, and that television reaches 64% daily. The programs produced by your commission were aired to this vast audience on 79,984 separate occasions during 1964. To our knowledge, this is the largest religious broadcast effort in the world. What does this represent in actual cost? Well, just a few pennies per thousand listeners, really. Is there any other means by which we can so quickly and economically expand the preaching of the living Christ and to introduce so many new millions to our unique Southern Baptist faith? The answer must be, there is not. Over 1,700 radio and television stations carry our programs. This appears to be a very substantial number. That is, until you consider that there are more than 5,600 stations in the United States. In addition to the 1,700 we are already on, there are many more which are ready to provide us with airtime as soon as we can produce program material suitable to their needs. Our goal for the next year is to place commission-produced programs on 250 more radio stations here in America, not to mention the increase we'll be working toward in foreign countries. This is to be net gain. At the same time, we are planning to double our assistance to Southern Baptist churches in their radio and television ministries. As more money is provided to the commission, we will begin supplying stations with a new type of one-minute inspirational television program presenting some of our outstanding preachers and laymen. The new children's television program continues to develop. 4 episodes have already been produced and tested, and 9 more must be added before the stations will accept them as a series. These are only 2 of the many exciting ideas we're constantly researching and testing and producing for our pulpit in the sky. But you must remember that not only does the work of your radio and television commission undergird the work of all Southern Baptist agencies, but it penetrates into the no man's land of spiritual warfare, reaching unsaved millions wherever they are. And it speaks to them in unmistakable language of hope and new life in Christ. The facilities are ready. The time is ripe. The world is listening. Pray that what we say will be effective for Christ and for His kingdom.